And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Joe Devine, and I'm now joined by Seb Stafford-Blore.
Hello, Joe Devine.
And JJ Bull the Bullard.
Hello.
Thanking JJ for stepping in at last minute's notice there. Why can't I talk?
Don't know. I'm always ready to talk.
At late
ready
notice.
To replace people yes. at the last minute.
Ready to replace Alex Stewart, who's stuck on a train, unfortunately, so can't be here. But he sends his love to all the listeners. Of course he did that. Yeah. Anyway, lots to talk about today. All the big football happened at the weekend, all of the football. Man City, Liverpool. Big, exciting game. Yeah, that was fun for everyone. Everton, of course, making the relegation battle a little bit less interesting than it was before. And old Tottenham, continuing a fantastic streak, will come to them. Arsenal falling apart a little bit, perhaps. Two games in a row, or is this one game? Have I gone insane? I can't remember.
Two games in a row.
And Norwich, probably a little bit too late, winning a game against Burnley, and also helping to make the relegation battle, potentially, and we'll come to discuss this, a little bit less interesting than it was before both of those games happened. I don't know.
I'd say more.
You say more?
Or the same.
Well, I suppose the level of interest is all subjective, isn't it? And guess what else is not subjective? It's The Athletic. Not subjective for the most part, because it's full of facts. I mean, sometimes there's opinion stuff, in which case...
It can be subjective.
But I would say the majority of the stuff, at least I read on there, is objective. Mm-hmm. Objectively good. Wouldn't you agree, JJ?
Yes.
I read Nick Miller's nice piece on Friday... Sort of, you know, being the pretend, well, not the only person in the world, but one of the only people in the world to ask the question, not will Manchester United appoint Ten Hag, but should Ten Hag want to do that? That's very interesting. I liked that. Always a nice take from Nick Miller, the Mill Man. And you can check that out by visiting theathletic.com/TIFO, theathletic.com/TIFO, where you'll find a 30-day free trial to read the Mill Man and others. Absolutely free for 30 days.
He kind of preferred Ghostface Miller.
Ghostface Miller?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, Miller the Killer, you know.
The good thing about influence is that if you just keep saying something long enough, it will become true.
Yeah.
Yeah? Anyway, that's the Millman. Fine. I will leave you now in the warm hands and the cool embrace of all of the big football that did happen over the weekend.
Should I reference the excellent shirt that I'm wearing that we were sent very kindly?
Please do, and describe it for the listeners. I know that the viewers will be able to see it.
Of course. So if you're listening to this and can't see it, I'm wearing a Hawaiian shirt that looks like a sort of SpongeBob SquarePants thing, but with loads of heads of Joe Linton, the Newcastle ball-winning midfielder.
It's a delightful shirt.
Yeah, the Pod on the Tyne podcast.
Which is the Athletic's Newcastle podcast, by the way. If listeners don't know, I actually think it's one of the best ones in the network. I really enjoy listening to Chris and George.
Well, they very kindly sent us this shirt, and I've decided to wear it. So thanks very much, guys, for this.
Thanks to Pod on the Tyne.
You should have seen his little face the first time you put it on.
Sure.
It's got a little bit happier.
Yeah.
Came out of the packet.
It suits you. You know, it's a very bright and colourful shirt. Yeah. And I feel like you're the only person here that should be wearing it. Well, there we go. Thanks to Pod on the Tyne for that lovely shirt. And JJ will be sporting it for 30 days straight in support of Gillington. Yeah. And of course, Newcastle, who I don't think are on the...
Gillington. That's what you said.
Gillington. Gillington.
You said Gillington.
Gillington. No, I didn't. I think your ears aren't working.
Listen back, listeners, you'll hear him say Gillington.
I don't think Newcastle are on the plate to talk about today, but why would they be? They are very comfortably, not so comfortably, but fairly comfortably mid-table now.
Also, not the greatest game against Wolves. They won, and I think they are definitely now safe. But
can I say, when any team wins or loses or draws against Wolves, it's never really the greatest game.
That feels like a good example of something that you say with enough conviction for it not to be challenged.
Yeah.
Just put it out there.
In which case, let's move on. Starting with the biggest news of the weekend, not the biggest news, the biggest game, Man City 2-2 Liverpool. And now I watched this game, as did both of you, And I had a distinct feeling that whilst it was a big game, and what I've come to expect from big games in the Premier League over the last 10 years is that they tend to under-deliver on the promise or the marketing. This one was very exciting. Plenty of goals, plenty of drama, and plenty of fun. Who wants to talk about it first?
Oh, I loved it. I love this game. Really exciting. Is that all the things you just said? It was really fun to watch, which is good. Didn't let it down. But that's because you got two managers who, I think they took on this game as though the more you attack, the more likely you are to win. So you're defending by attacking, that old thing. But rather than having, if you think of back in the day, maybe Man United, Arsenal, they both were quite cagey with each other. When Jose Mourinho was involved, definitely cagey. So
Liverpool games.
You think it'd be one mistake that breaks it down. But the same way in this game, it's definitely one mistake that'll change the entire game. But I think either side could have won 4 or 5 nil.
Yeah.
It's kind of the thing that, so it just takes one mistake and you're not paying attention and another mistake and the score. And the way that City, so that the way they conceded the first goal to Liverpool was when they kind of dropped off a little bit, the intensity, maybe Liverpool was just naturally more into it or something like that afterwards. But the more they pushed, the harder it was for Liverpool to get into it. And then you saw, like, they started off so well, didn't start quite as well in the second half, which is when Liverpool scored. It's just those tiny, small moments of games when Liverpool get back into it. They're both so good.
I mean, I suppose the thing is it shows the calibre of both teams, doesn't it? Because there aren't, you know, including the rest of the teams in the Big Six, Seb, there aren't other teams in the Premier League that will face Liverpool or Manchester City in quite the way that they faced each other, right? It was just fun.
Definitely not. Also, this game was full of really good players doing really good things. I think if you go into each of the four goals, you can find something exceptional either at the root or at the point of scoring. So if you think about it, Trent Alexander-Arnold's cut back ahead of the Jota goal, Thiago's ball that made it, it's what you want, because it's obviously these games get built up and they're kind of spectacle. They are the Sunday event, and you get the Premier League at its very, very best. And you get these players at the very, very best, and you get things which, as a fan, you watch and you think, yeah, most other players, so the Alexander-Arnold cutback, most other players slashed that across the six-yard box, I would have thought. Or, you know, the way that De Bruyne beat Fabinho for the first goal, like the kind of the quality of movement. It's just special moments in a feature game. And it kind of alleviates that feeling that you sometimes get of being cheated on this kind of occasion. You think this is just boring. It's existing on its own hype. It's kind of a little bit of a myth of a match. But so as well, great.
In terms of how they were competing with each other, it didn't feel, there's no point when they were trying to batter each other. It was pure competitive.
Yeah.
The amount of aggression you had into it was competitive aggression, which is exactly what I like in football.
It was pure football.
You're just trying to go against, like, trying to beat the other team. You're not trying to like hurt the other team. Mm-hmm. You're just trying to, there was no like disgusting, like weird sliding challenges going in.
Yeah,
I mean, sometimes
nothing snide.
Like, can I say on that note? I saw, you know, I understand fan culture, and it's nice and fun to razz other teams and other team supporters. But I did see a lot of tweets over the weekend referencing how nice a derby it was in, you know, in sort of air quotes, and how basically patronising it. It's not the big derby. It's not an historical rivalry. It's not two teams that have hated each other for 100 years, and therefore it lacks something. I mean. And lots of these tweets accompanied by pictures of players smiling at each other, shaking hands, enjoying the day. And I'm reading these tweets thinking, what's wrong with this? Surely this is, I mean, it's subjective potentially, but I think that's better. I don't understand how you could use that. These footballers don't hate each other. They enjoyed playing a fantastic game of extremely high quality football. Well, one point we maybe should make is that at times, you know, the way that we're selling the game is as if it was perfect from both teams the whole way through the game. It certainly wasn't. And that's kind of what made it exciting, right? The football was fantastic. It was played at an elite level. But you've referenced this already, JJ. Many of the mistakes did lead to goals. There were mistakes made by both teams, and it just made the game more exciting.
On tiny, fine margins as well. So especially, it looks like Trent Alexander-Arnold's caught out a couple of times, maybe positioning or stepping up. But it's tiny, tiny, like inches of timing with the runs. That I know inches is not a measurement of time, but...
Sure.
When players get in behind, so you look at the thinking about maybe
as if you're a snail.
Thinking of maybe doing a tactical breakdown of this video, which I don't think we're doing now.
Sure.
we can just do it out loud on a podcast instead, rather than using the board. Things I saw from both teams, really high line, really very aggressively high line from Liverpool, which City knew they would do. They were City, rather than playing with like a front five, which they'd normally have, were playing mostly with a front four, but then Walker would be the extra man running from deep. So he was not only a defender using his pace to cover, he was also overlapping constantly to be the extra forward, which is pretty cool. And
very energetic.
He's amazing, Kyle Walker. Think of the player he's turned into under Guardiola. It's amazing.
In his 30s, right?
Yes.
Still able to do that.
One of the fastest players you've seen play. And like, yeah. And then you had Liverpool obviously attacking the way they normally do. Alexander-Arnold, very influential. But the it was all about the timing of runs from Man City's players getting in behind the line, the Liverpool defensive line, to get on the top of these diagonal balls. And both were looking for diagonal balls, switching the play. City also very compact. So you normally you'd see them out of possession. I think the spacing was much reduced for this game. So between players, they were very much matching what Liverpool were doing. So there there was a lot of space left on the wide areas for those runs from players like Walker and stuff like that, which is a small tweak. And it's not like a huge tactical like masterclass. These are just things they will have worked on in training where they've gone, I think this is where we can get in at goal by timing this run in behind. And I mean, they almost won it, Mahrez. And this is the thing, that so I love Mahrez. I think he's a great player. But maybe not fair, but... Lionel Messi scores that.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, players like that's the ones who win the derby.
Such a weird finish to go for in that situation.
You get it though, because Alisson's so far off his line, you see it, and then he's got to adjust, and he's put too much weight on it, and maybe the scene gets to him.
It was kind of a perfect moment to finish the game, because I remember thinking after the second Man City goal, like reflecting on how fine the margins are, because if you think about, if you break that goal down to its constituent parts, you've got the cross by Cancelo, which is absolutely perfect. You got the finish from Jesus, which is, I think, kind of underrated. I think it's a really difficult ball to control.
Yeah.
And then you've got the defensive line, which is a microsecond too slow to react. Alisson ditto. And so joined up, you've got all these moments which are kind of interdependent of each other. But if you make the slightest mistake, you get punished by that level of quality. It hardly seems fair. I think that's part of this game where it's so unfair to kind of fixate on. I think we all saw Trent Alexander-Arnold getting flogged on social media for, you know, defensive fragilities, which seems like something that people say when they haven't got anything to say about Alexander-Arnold.
Mm. I think it is relevant. I mean, but you take the good stuff.
But I don't think he's really a fullback. I think that... I think it's... It's almost like the terminology for what he does doesn't really exist, like the language for it, because...
Well, it sounds smart when you say it now as well, because it's been done so many times. I mean, we've done it before.
Well, I've done it too. The more you see him, the more it seems kind of secondary. Like, I think everyone accepts that. Is he the best defender? No, not really. But is that a prominent part of his job description? No, not really. And so it's kind of fine. It's like criticizing a centre forward for not being particularly good at defending headers.
Can I say, do you know what I think it is? It's like criticizing someone who's doing two full-time jobs at the same time for not doing one of them as well as like the best person in the world at that thing.
And also, like, footballers, it's kind of like what they are as a player is an aggregate between what they're good and bad at, and, you know, where is the surplus? And clearly with someone like that, you would never want to subdue the creative attacking instincts and the quality that he provides. And so you just accept the kind of the less good, not the bad, just the less good parts of his game.
I bet Cancelo gets caught out as well. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
Maybe not highlighted as much because Alexander-Arnold is so prominent.
So does Kyle Walker. I'm completely with you. I think his evolution has been amazing under Guardiola. Is Kyle Walker the best defensive fullback / centre-back in the league? No, and he never will be. But it doesn't matter because of the way that he's used. And it's the same for Alexander-Arnold, I think.
Every piece. And that point I was trying to make on Mahrez, I think, is that, there's the thing, Alan Shearer did analysis of this game in The Athletic, talks about how he realises that City are all, you know, the things they've achieved, they've done without a forward. You don't necessarily need a forward or a goal scorer, whatever you say. But if they had someone like Haaland or Lewandowski, something like that, he guarantees you more goals. And then that's the difference with, like, Mahrez is an exceptional player, but not in the top tier of the entire world because
which is hardly a criticism, by the way, because what you're saying is he's not one of the best five players in the world.
This is exactly what I mean. Yeah. And this is the thing, and it's not to do with technique, because he can score that in training. He'll do that, you know, 100 times out of 100.
What is it to do with?
It's mentality. Yeah. So it's knowing exactly where you are, exactly when. And that's the thing that makes Messi such an absolute freak of nature, is that he's then able to do these sorts of things where players like Lewandowski now is just one of these exceptional players who would finish that.
Yeah,
maybe Salah would have finished it.
I feel like it's decision making too. Like
I think you're right.
If you go back through like Messi's goals, yes, Ronaldo's goals, Lewandowski's, it's amazing how often they choose the perfect finish for the occasion. Not just like executing it and converting the chance technically, but actually making the right decision before doing that. It's kind of I don't think we can really relate to that because it's such a.
It's a high level understanding. It's
almost
like,
unrelated.
They're just in tune. They're in tune with what's going on around them. They have the force. They are one with nature of where they are.
Yeah, they're chained into the universe.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. But they might only be for a certain period of their entire career. The thing with Messi is it's been forever. Whereas Mahrez goes through little periods of games where suddenly he is. And don't know. Because remember, as Mahrez, who missed that penalty, wasn't it? That they would have won
at Anfield a couple of years ago when he slammed it over the stand.
It's mentality. There it is. He's got the technique?
Could be.
Oh.
Well, anyway, this game leaves both teams, Manchester City, Liverpool, 31 games played. There's 1 point in it. 74 points for Man City in first, 73 points for Liverpool in second.
Mm.
7 games of the season left to play. I don't think anyone in the world is able to pick the winner at this current moment. I mean, the big surprise, I suppose, and we talked about this a little bit last week, is that the gap was so big 2 months ago, and now there's 1 point in it. If you had to, I don't know, if you had to put your hand on your head and do a little dance, would you?
I wonder whether, well, yes, obviously, but I wonder whether this is going to be one of those seasons which comes down to Champions League involvement.
Yeah.
Because at the moment, you'd say, I think both these sides are going to win the rest of the remainder of the
game. I think they'll be in the Champions League final
but
together.
But then that's
right?
The thing, isn't it? It's like who balances and who...
Couldn't it be? Like, wouldn't it be amazing if they both made it to the Champions League final, if they took the Premier League to the final day? Like, I mean, yeah, you know, we're talking real big fun stuff here, gang. Real fun.
I think one of the things about this game is that often as a neutral, because of how big football's become and how kind of conspiratorial and, you know, how many other issues, in inverted commas, it deals with, it's kind of nice to have a game where we're all sitting here on a Monday thinking, wasn't that great? Wasn't that bit of skill amazing? Wasn't that decision fantastic? Wasn't that all unrelatedly excellent?
This is true. Can I sort of broaden that point as well and say we were talking in the office this morning with some of the editors of The Athletic about the game. One of them referenced what Roy Keane said in the aftermath of the game about how both teams sort of refused to push their high lines back.
Didn't yield.
Yield. And you know, there's some suggestion that is an example of an incredible mentality because... I think the instinct, it sounds like, would be to drop back if you're under pressure or if you're slightly ahead, and neither of these teams did that. I'm part of me thinks that they're system-born and bred players by now. They've lived in these systems for such a long time that I don't think going back, they associate going back with defending. That would be my slight criticism of that comment. But I think the mentality point is still right, and it's lovely to have watched a game which doesn't appear to be reductive in any way. I mean, when was the last time you watched a Premier League game that didn't seem to be reductive, subjectively at least?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Can't remember.
Yeah.
You watch any of the other big six teams play each other, there's always some variation of, you know, one of them sits a little deeper, we'll try to get them on the counter-attack, we'll try to do it with three at the back, we'll try this, you know, popular style. I mean, this just felt like pure football.
Do you remember in Rocky 1 and 2 where he fights Apollo Creed and nobody takes a backward step? They just punch each other. No one defends, no one blocks. They just punch each other. They just take turns.
Yeah.
It was a little bit like that, which kind of clashes with the no violence and no snide comment right at the beginning. But it's kind of true. It was very pure form of the game. You attack, we'll attack. No one is going to compromise on their ideology at all.
Well, do you know something else that made me feel like it was an old school game?
Is it The Athletic?
No, it was a good try, I guess, but no. It was the red fire bucket that was brought onto the pitch when the smoke, what do they call them? Smoke flare. Bomb. It was kind of a smoke thing. It emitted
flare.
Is that a flare?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, makes sense. a city blue flare on the field. And the good steward, that sounds like the name of a Netflix show, doesn't it? Good steward.
A boring 4-season run.
Yeah.
Not enough happens episode to episode.
Almost nothing happens.
Slow pace. His wife's absolutely fine.
Everything's fine.
He's got
job's going quite
very
well.
Much
could be better, could be worse, but it's generally fine.
One episode about the pension. The good steward hops onto the pitch with the red fire bucket and he pops the flare and takes it off. I thought I haven't seen a red fire bucket like that since 1997 in a school. Yeah. I didn't even know that they still had fire buckets and that they do. They're red. I love the fire bucket is red. Is that a universal thing, do you think? Every fire bucket must be red? Is every fire engine red? There's a question. You know how they change colours for different things in different countries? I know in America they're red. They're red here. Are they red in all the other countries?
Would you remember about 20 years ago there was that firefighter strike and they had to use different fire engines and they were green? Do you remember that?
No.
Yeah, look that up. They were called green goddesses. There was a strike over something, I forget what.
Probably really poor paying conditions.
Probably really, really poor paying conditions.
I think probably like the historically the poor paying strike. Conditions from austerity and all the horrible cuts they made. But yeah, go on.
So they had to requisition some as some virgins from a previous generation, the green goddesses, and you can find photos of them.
Were they JJ, are you looking up whether all fire engines are red?
Yeah, I am.
Because ambulances in America are red, as far as I'm aware.
Oh, really?
I think, or maybe they're not.
Well, there's a theory. So the first thing that's come up is technology.org, and it's very, maybe this, probably this. So there's a theory that it could be to do with visibility. Red things stand out very well.
I thought it was just because red is fire.
And I also wondered that.
This is a fire truck.
But then, they can make them with LED screens all around the thing, so it could have actual fire on it now if you wanted that. But then it looks like they're advertising fires, and if anything, they don't want to get rid of them.
You don't want it to blend into the fire. Like if you're in a fire and you're looking for a fire bucket, you don't want to.
You know they don't drive into the fire with the car.
I'm talking about the fire bucket.
That's how they put it out. They ram the fire
in. I quite like the idea. I don't know what they call them in America. It's a fire truck, isn't it? But here we call them a fire engine. Mm. And I quite like that. I think the engine of the fire, that seems counterproductive, doesn't it? But never mind. There we go. If you live in a country and you're listening where your fire engines, fire trucks are not red, please let us know. I would love to know that. But for now, let's go to a break. Seems like the right thing to do.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, and we had an actual break there. Very unusual for us. Now, let us discuss quickly. Was it this game at St Mary's?
Sure was.
Southampton 0-6 Chelsea, I believe. This game, Alex Stewart was going to talk about this game, but he is not here, as discussed. Seb, I think you saw the highlights. We'll let Alex talk about it next week when he gets back, if it's worthy of such, from a Southampton perspective. But I hear that Timo Werner scored twice.
He did, and he hit both posts and the crossbar.
Okay.
As well. So Timo Werner... Not double hat trick, but we need to come up with a phrase.
The Wernerism.
The Wernerism.
He Werned it.
He Werned it. Yeah. He gave it a proper Wernering.
He Werned it.
Yeah.
Well, he did
Wern it. Yeah.
He scored two goals. Congratulations. I'm happy for
the match ball. Almost. Not quite. He did play very, very well, though. Although Southampton looked, polite word? Fragile.
Yeah.
Fragile. They look really vulnerable. They're in one of those pits of form that they encounter every now and again where they just look hopeless.
I can't remember who it was that I saw tweeting on Saturday. I didn't watch this game. It was a 3 p.m. game, so it wasn't shown on TV here in the UK. But I saw someone tweeting at about 35 minutes when Chelsea were already 4-0 up, saying, "This feels familiar." And I wondered, oh, yeah. This is the team, of course, that has lost 9-0 twice.
There were a couple of really nice Mason Mount goals in here, which is... Mason Mount occupies a really odd place in British football because he's acquired this weird teacher's pet reputation because of the Lampard thing. Also, people he was sort of forced into a kind of binary relationship with Jack Grealish with England, because if he played, it generally meant that Grealish wouldn't, and Grealish was, as JJ knows, new Pele. Remember
that from last the summer? Correct, yeah,
that was fun.
He's too nice to be good. That's how he's seen.
But he's an awfully good player.
Yeah,
and there was his touch for, I think it's the Marcus Alonso goal, is just. Kind of nice little reminder that is a very, very, very good footballer who does a lot of things really well. He just, he's not flash. And I think that's kind of part of his problem.
Do you think this was a reaction against Chelsea's poor performance in the Champions League midweek last year?
It looked a lot like a group of players who had spent the last couple of days being shouted at and being told that they hadn't been good enough.
Yeah. Fired up.
They got, they muscled Southampton.
I've just watched all the goals and it looks very much like one of those things where you just, like as a manager, the Southampton manager, there's nothing much you can really do to your players when they're just falling apart like this.
Players
are panicking, so they start chasing the ball, but then that leaves space for someone else, which means that there's space for someone else further on, and someone else comes over.
When is panicking useful? In what situation in the world?
I guess when you're just trying to block the ball from going in on the line.
I feel like Everton Man United is a good example of when panicking is good.
Yeah.
In a way, and we'll talk about that later. But like this was... everything that could go against Southampton did. So even they went in at halftime 4-0 down, and you think, what's that halftime team looking like, sounding like? It's going to be a kind of, right, keep the score down, lads, let's try and do this. 0-0, it's the classic Sunday league morning team talk. And then they concede a fifth within, I think, about 3.5 minutes of the second half beginning.
Sure.
And it's just, there's nothing to fight for. There's no purpose in panicking. You just think, oh, let's just, I hope this is over soon.
Was the Titanic built in Southampton?
It was. No, it was launched in Southampton.
It was built in Glasgow.
In Belfast.
In Belfast.
Yeah, Belfast. Yeah. There's a really good memorial to the engineers of the Titanic in Southampton, though. That's worth visiting. You can actually visit that on your way to St Mary's if you go, you walk from the train station to St Mary's.
Seb knows all the hookup spots. Yeah, really does.
Is there a statue of Leo DiCaprio there, reprising his King of the World moment?
Yeah, it's not a good likeness, though. It's kind of average likeness. Mm. It looks remarkably like just a normal, you know, instead of Leonardo DiCaprio, it looks like a normal statue with no kind of human characteristics whatsoever. So the likeness is bad.
Sounds like you described a rock.
Yeah. It's more rockish than DiCaprio-ish, I would say.
Not The Rock.
No.
He'd have been good in Titanic.
Yeah, he'd have been great.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Yeah. The Rock, yeah. He could have punched the iceberg to, like, get out of here. Yeah.
He would have saved everyone.
Yeah.
Leo didn't save anyone.
He could have done the people's elbow on the glacier.
He did the people's elbow on Kate Winslet when she's riding on the fence. That would have been funny. Yeah. That would have broken the fence. Mm-hmm. That feels like a prop that could also be used at a wrestling match, you know? But let's not reduce Dwayne The Rock Johnson to only his wrestling moves. A fine actor with a wonderful range. Fine comic actor.
Yes.
Let's say.
I have a theory about actors like The Rock. You shouldn't give them...
Looking forward to hearing this.
You shouldn't give them alternative names in films. They should just appear as The Rock or Dwayne.
Right.
Because what's the point? Because you're not... Like, if you call him Steve Clark, for instance, in, what was the Towering Inferno... Skyscraper.
Sure.
What's the virtue of him having another name?
What you're saying is he can't disappear into a role because he's The Rock.
His physical characteristics are so unique and his style of acting and his identity as an actor is so unique that it's kind of futile trying to give him.
I don't agree. I would have to say when I watch, you know, Jumanji rebooted or I watch, you know, I watched The Other Guys the other day when he and Samuel L. Jackson play the hero cops at the beginning. Mm-hmm. I think he's got a tremendous range. I think he disappears into a role pretty quickly.
I think the best example of this actually is when his SNL appearance, when he plays a variety of characters in sketches, but particularly the one where he plays the mad scientist with the robot, the most evil robot.
Sure. Producer Don is
laughing. I haven't mentioned what the robot does because it's a sketch. It's on SNL, but I feel like I just shouldn't mention it.
I think Seb stereotyped The Rock.
Yeah,
I'm a big admirer of The Rock. The Rock is great. It's just that I don't.
Everton 1-0 Manchester United. This was an interesting game, wasn't it? Quite a boring game, to be honest. Lots of interesting things to come from it, but actually, I watched this and it was a bore. I wouldn't really enjoy
United
it at any moment.
Terrible.
They seem bad at the
relegate
moment.
Them.
Yeah. But on the other side, let's talk about Everton first because they seemed up for it, JJ.
Yeah. I mean, one of the benefits they had of this game to other ones where they've lost is that they've had a few players back. So Allen's been out with suspension. That's a big miss in midfield. Fabian Delph came in, played as a six and was very, very good. I mean, he learned how to do that under Pep Guardiola. So I don't think for 1 minute this is Lampard come up with some sort of genius. It's just that he's learned all that.
Well, as evidenced
also by... He was largely left alone because no one was trying to do anything to him.
Right. But also what you're saying as evidenced by the fact that Everton's players ran 10 kilometres more than United and they, according to what we have written here, they recorded 44 more sprints than United did, which is the most they've outsprinted any opponent in any game this season, which is a we're up for it game, isn't it?
Is that what tells us
that the players are revved up?
I mean, I think they probably have a certain level of extra motivation. Again, I mean, I don't want to be super critical of Lampard or whatever, but I don't know how he's trying to get these players revved up for games. That's what you're going to try and do. But I don't think a few words of encouragement, like, come on, lads, the team talk for these games is done the day before. They do a meeting where they sit around and they talk about what they're going to do in the game. And then largely what happens is that you'll be in if you played Sunday League ever, people like clap their hands, like, come on, lads, it doesn't get you fired up at all. You're all, I mean, for me, you're in your own head anyway.
Well, what gets you fired up when you're playing football?
I'm trying to prove someone wrong.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
If someone did something that I thought was a slight on my character, I'd be furious.
Oh,
and I feel like I'd play better.
Yeah.
Or I'd run beyond the point where normally I'd stop running.
Yeah, I think I have to try and prove. I mean, that's for most of my life, actually. If someone tells me I can't do something, I want to then show them that I can. Here I am today.
Let's get Mr. Bull on the phone.
Yeah.
Other things that
Joe
came.
Joe spoke to my dad the other day on the phone. I was speaking to him for some advice and things. And Joe just took the phone from me and said, hello, Mr. Bull.
He's a very pleasant man. Everton, they're now 4 points, I think, clear of the relegation zone. They, I believe, are same number of games played as Burnley, 4 points clear. They have a very difficult run, but this was a huge win for them. And I think, look, watching that game, we've talked about Everton in this it's ever so slightly reductive way before. Maybe we should get Paddy or Greg from The Athletic on at some point to discuss it in more detail. But watching Richarlison's performance, who wasn't fantastic in the game, but he was sparky for sure. He was aggressive. I really liked the little battle between him and Wan-Bissaka. I thought it was verging on aggressive at times, and I enjoyed that. But he was a difference maker in the game, and I feel like they have him. They've got Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who's
still not fit.
He's still not fit, and also I didn't realize. Obviously, it's because he's been injured for a really long time, but hasn't scored a goal. Also, the commentator said since August, which from a psychological perspective is going to have a bit of a dampener on you. They've got the players to get out of this situation, and hopefully, this win would kick them on in order to do that. You would hope if you were an Everton fan.
Yeah, I think so. Also, with Richarlison, he was great without the ball.
Yeah.
Which is, you always know he's going to express himself. He's a very gifted footballer. But I think if you were searching for proper sustainable positives and evidence that Everton are tuned in to what's happening at the moment, you'd look at his performance without the ball. You'd probably look at Alex Iwobi's performance. Inright did a good job on match day of highlighting his pressing work.
Iwobi was great.
Iwobi was good. I thought Seamus Coleman played very, very well as well. Jordan Pickford had a pretty good game. So there are signs.
Both goalkeepers, incidentally, had a very good game.
Yeah, they did. They did for sure. Everton playing Leicester next, and I think that's kind of less than an ideal opponent. Leicester are in mid-table. They're not really bothered by the Premier League at the moment. There's not going to be much confrontation or needle in that game.
Sure.
They're a very technical team. They're kind of a sterile challenge in a way. They're focused on the Europa Conference League. So we'll see. But I don't know. I think it's a little bit disingenuous for us not to reference just how bad United are.
Oh, they for sure.
Embarrassing.
Let us begin to do that now.
Yeah, yeah. Just for a bit of context, I think. Because that, like, I'm not one for those running statistics necessarily, or I don't treat them as you would a kind of a true indicator of performance. But on the base of what everybody saw from United, how often, like, players receive the ball at a standing start, for instance.
One slight positive, I would say. I thought Marcus Rashford had a slightly better game than he's had recently.
Yeah.
The downside was that everyone else was worse. Much, much, much worse.
I feel like the difference between him, and this is kind of damning with faint praise, but is that he was the one Man United player looked like he wanted to actually alter the game in some way.
Yeah.
The rest were just there for a Saturday afternoon, for a bit of football, just walking around. And there were okay moments.
I thought Sancho was trying.
I thought he was trying. I feel like Jadon Sancho is so far inside his own head at the moment in terms of his reputation.
It doesn't make sense to me, him being there even. Yeah.
He does not look happy. Or he just looks like a bundle of frustration. Also, what made Sancho good at Dortmund was activity around him, pace in the play, smart decisions being made ahead. Because Sancho excels when he's asked to use the ball in the correct way and release at the right time. He's not someone that beats fullbacks on the outside. He's not a three or four player beaten in one dribble kind of player.
Karl Anka wrote a great piece about Sancho on The Athletic over the weekend, talking about how he was purportedly bought to play in that empty right wing position and has played more on the left this season so far, which is something we talked about before. It's worth reading that.
Well, it's a good article but the thing about Sancho to me is I don't think it really matters on which side of the pitch he plays. It matters what happens around him because you've got to think of him like a component. He's not a Messi or a Ronaldo or a Gareth Bale. He's not that player at all. He is someone that you put into your team to make other players better. And you look at, for instance, the relationship he developed with Erling Haaland at Dortmund, but also Marco Reus. And you look at how they excel as a result of what he does, not necessarily him as the exclamation point on the end of moves. Although he scores goals and assists, of course he does. But he feels very misunderstood. And I'm not saying Jadon feels very misunderstood. It looks, the perception is of a misunderstood player. And that has to be fixed because he's enormously valuable. He's an excellent footballer. It's just that it's not working.
Well, even when I was texting you about this, thing I was noticed is that because Wan-Bissaka underlaps quite a lot. It's something that Mara noticed in one of our videos, actually. Wan-Bissaka underlaps a lot, which means he kind of has to stay wide to keep the width there. But then he'd often then be 1v1 with a fullback or 2v1, and he just never watched to take him on. But in that role, that's exactly what he has to do. So he's better than playing as an inside forward where he's running inside, where he's probably best because he's right-footed, mostly off of the left. I thought Rashford was all right. I don't think he was, I mean, I don't think he had a particularly good game and wasn't really, it just doesn't drop for him. And when you have that lack of, maybe a lack of confidence, which he might have, I think that that stuff just kind of happens. It's that weird part of, he's not in tune with nature. That's very much what Rashford is, not just now.
Yeah.
And so things aren't dropping for him. I thought Ronaldo was trying to get involved by dropping out to the left quite a lot to get on the ball.
Well, mentioning Ronaldo, we should also reference, of course, that the police have launched an investigation into the incident with the phone.
What a weird episode.
Did you see this?
Yeah.
Where he, apparently seemed to just slap a phone out of a young Everton fan's hand.
And I think
the hand is injured.
The mother of the Everton fan made a police complaint or something. I'm not sure, but it's a very strange...
Yeah, he has since apologised for social media.
You know what it feels
great
like?
Great stuff. When he looked very frustrated all game.
When you watch these Man United players at the moment, it seems like within that team, he's kind of good enough not to be the worst player. That's the objective, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like as long as I don't stand out for doing something truly awful.
Well, you can hide in the crowd, for sure.
I can hide in the crowd. Yeah. I can hide my
it's
bad
like
form.
When the whole class at school is bad, you sort of, no one really gets punished that much because
as long as you're not the worst.
They can't fit all 30 children in the chokey. You remember the chokey, the cupboard from Matilda?
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Is that what it's called, the chokey?
Don't know.
I think so. Do you remember Matilda? I think it's called the chokey.
I mean, the other thing with them is that the captain of the club is kind of subject to lots of ridicule all of the time.
Right.
So Maguire, and then he'll make a loose pass that sends it out, and that's the captain, and then he just kind of gets on with things. There's a bit where, was it the ball comes off Nemanja Matić's hand, and Harry Maguire puts his hand up to appeal for the free kick against his own team.
Mm.
I don't understand.
But to be honest with you, if you're Harry Maguire now, you're probably trying too hard. Like, I know what we've just said
for
about hiding in plain sight, but the conversation around him has become so... extreme and silly that these kind of things are going to happen.
It's not his fault that he was bought as this massively expensive player and then made captain. Those seem like two very poor decisions.
And also it played in a role which doesn't really suit him. I thought Maram did a great job with that video in explaining kind of his dilemma. And we did something on the Illustrated channel probably about 6 months ago about, it was written by Tom Warville actually, about how he should be used and where he should be in the kind of the proactive defender, passive defender sort of a spectrum. And it's a difficult gig. It really, really is. You're a very expensive player in one of the most visible teams in the world.
Especially that club. Like the
club
global
right now,
focus
like,
on it.
Also, you're in the glare of everybody's glee in a way, because you get people like, well, us. Like, you grow up and United are brilliant. All the time they're brilliant. They stamp on your team every year, twice a year, knock you out of cups and tournaments and everything, and they ruin everything about your season. When they're bad... everyone loves it. And everyone loves a Man United player who's, who becomes a favorite.
It's getting quite
fun.
Boring now, though, isn't it? It's just sort of, now it's sad. It's a bit like, you know, the scene in the American High School film when the bully first gets, you know, gets his comeuppance, you think, oh, that's, you deserve it. And then when
he has nine years of comeuppance,
but the point actually, I feel bad. This is wrong.
People always grab onto those moments and they will force themselves to find it funny. Like, some of the moments are funny, but that's why someone like Harry Maguire is in such a difficult slot, because his own fans aren't exactly rallying around him.
Mm.
And rival fans enjoy a big footballer, a big high-priced footballer falling on his ass every week.
Do you know what I find funny about it?
Tell me.
When fans or people, when people laugh or want to laugh together or show that they want to laugh, even if they don't find it funny, you know, all they're really doing deep down is they're looking for connection. They want to connect to someone, right? That's the instinct there. Harry Maguire is a human being. He probably wants to connect to people as well. Imagine if you could just connect with Harry Maguire in a nice way without all the need for the laughing. Everyone's problem would be solved with kindness.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
We've only got 8 minutes before this podcast finishes, so we have to move on very quickly. Yeah. And kindly, let's move on to discuss Aston Villa 0, Tottenham 4. Seb, you were accused this week of diminishing the conversation about Tottenham so as not to curse the performances, I believe.
Yeah.
So I guess let's just move on straight away from the game and not talk about it at all.
Sure. So last game was the Scottish Premiership for the split this weekend. It's very exciting.
Yeah.
No one involved with the Scottish Premiership or Sky seemed to promote any part of it.
Well, like I expect that's to do with the audience size.
I mean, they had the Dundee Derby, the Edinburgh Derby.
Did they? They had all the derbies. Had
teams like Aberdeen didn't make the split, the top six.
Oh, did they
like,
not?
No, it was like a huge weekend.
Aberdeen are not in the top six?
They're not in the top six.
That is dreadful.
That is bad.
Really poor.
That is very, very bad.
I think, honestly, the lack of promotion of that weekend. So they're trying to grow. That Sky have the contract for this, the Scottish League. They don't show all the games every year. This is one thing, which is bad.
Yeah.
There's no sponsorship on the cup and as well. But the whole thing's kind of, it's just really, really poor. I actually got invited to meet the Aberdeen chairman on Thursday.
Did you?
I randomly got private messaged. I went to meet
Wasn't that random, was it? I doubt it was random.
Dave Cormack.
Do you think, what are you saying, they just picked a random 11 numbers and it was your phone?
I think
it was probably targeted. They targeted
it's very
you.
Very much based, I think, on how many followers.
Not random at all.
Influencers.
Sure.
Of which I definitely am not.
One of the Aberdeen influencers.
Yeah. No one in Aberdeen.
Who's the biggest Aberdeen influencer?
Who's the most famous person from Aberdeen?
Yeah, that's a better question, actually. Yeah.
There's some very famous scientists that come out of there. I'm trying to think of any of their names. Ian Jess.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
He's not a scientist.
No, he's a footballer, but yeah.
Mr. Alex Ferguson.
The five most famous people to come from. Dennis Law.
Dennis Law, very famous, yeah.
Emily Sandé.
Yeah, the singer, yeah.
Annie Lennox.
She's from Ellen.
She's from Aberdeen.
Oh, well, she's from, not Ellen, she's from, Annie Lennox is from Ellen. Emily Sandé is from another, Afford, I think she's from.
Lord Byron. But I'm half a Scot by birth and bred.
He'd have come from one of those massive estates, wouldn't he?
Paul Laurie, who I don't know.
He won golfer. The Masters.
A golfer.
You won the UK.
Paul Laurie won the Open when John Vandeveld hit his ball into the lake into the little river and went into the river to try and play it in his socks.
Well, speaking of golf, I watched some of the Masters golf yesterday. And guess who I saw on the coverage of the Masters golf?
Who?
It was Harry Kane, who'd flown all the way over to wherever the Masters golf was taking place in the deep south of America.
Augusta. In Georgia.
And was wearing a lovely pair of shorts and was just having a fantastic time talking about how much he liked to be there.
Loves his golf.
Yeah. All the best to him. So anyway, did he score any goals?
Got invited to meet Dave Cormack. It was very exciting.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, go on. Carry on talking about Aberdeen.
No, it's incredibly interesting, but very much... trying to get a message across of what things Dave Cormack has put in place at Aberdeen, which is actually very impressive.
Dave Cormack is who?
He's the chairman of Aberdeen.
He's the one you met.
He's been involved in the board for a long time, yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
People are going to actually get angry if we don't talk about... Just talk about Tottenham for 1 minute, please. And I promise, listen, to listeners, I know we didn't talk about your team. I'm so sorry. We do try to do it over the course of the season, spread it out. Tottenham are scoring lots of goals at the moment and not conceding many. Very exciting.
I want to talk about some of the direct football because obviously the fourth goal Tottenham scored at Villa Park speaks for itself. The direct football, I heard it branded as a kind of, some pundits called it kind of lucky hoof. You know, just
lucky
the ball
hoof.
Up and yeah,
I think that
some
one,
of the goals
the
are based
National,
on a lucky hoof.
I think it's the name of like
actually,
one of the dragons
actually,
from How to
actually,
Train Your
actually,
Dragons.
Actually,
you just keep saying actually. Yeah.
If you look at some of the goals, the construction of some of these sort of more direct bits of football, they're actually quite well orchestrated. So, for instance, look at the third goal Tottenham scored. Now, nice flat long ball from Christian Romero. Look how quickly Son reacts to it and is moving into the space to take advantage of the Kane knockdown. Also, look at the first goal, which that is not a hit and hope ball. It's a stretch of the defenders, have Son Heung-min running towards the back shoulder, but allowing Harry Kane to drop into the pocket of space behind
Son scored a hat-trick.
He did indeed.
Congratulations.
But point is that there's a little bit of planning, and this is not old school Wimbledon football. Good football team has to be able to kind of challenge the defensive line in both ways, and Tottenham's doing that really well. So you've got this nice hybrid of intricate passing football and control of the ball with a slightly more direct approach, which was a little thing under Pochettino too at times.
Okay, well, thanks for that, Seb. Much appreciated.
Strange old game. Absolutely. Also, shouldn't referee games like that?
No.
Because I agree. Shortens careers. That is, there's being physical, and then there's being kind of, then there's, as a referee, setting a bar so low that you can't really book players for the rest of the game. And that's how players get hurt.
Good. No, fair enough. Okay, that happened a little bit. Well, as I said to listeners before, Alex Stewart, who was supposed to be here today, was watched the Arsenal, Brighton, and Norwich Burnley game. So unfortunately, we can't really talk about them. But promise we'll be back to our best next week. You know, and I hope everyone who's listened has enjoyed themselves today.
Hey, we've got a live stream on Wednesday night too.
That is right. We're doing a live stream on Wednesday evening. Starts at 10 p.m. after the Champions League games. We'll be talking about Tuesday and Wednesday night's games. Very exciting. The conclusion, the dramatic conclusion to the quarterfinals. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be doing that. And indeed, we'll be doing that sort of throughout the rest of the Champions League rounds on Wednesdays. So join us then on the TIFO IRL channel. But for now, thank you, JJ Bull the Bullard.
Thank you.
And thanks to Seb Stafford-Bloor.
Thank you, Joe Devine.
Also, producer Don and producer Adonis. All the best and many, many, many thanks. And yeah, we'll be back next week with, hopefully, Alex, if the trains are working.
Yeah.
Take care and ta-ra.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.